Our reading today is from Luke. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee called Nazareth, to a virgin engaged to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and he came to her and said, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his ancestor David. He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" The angel said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be holy. He will be called the Son of God. And now, your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son. And this is the sixth month for her who is said to be barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." Then Mary said, "Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." The angel departed from her. Thanks. The word of God for the people of God.
What would you say is the most repeated command in the Bible? Love one another? Follow me? Turn in your pledge card? What would you say it is? It's actually this, most repeated command in the Bible, be not afraid. Throughout the Bible, God meets people, says it over and over again, be not afraid. All of the main characters of the Christmas story heard the same message from the angels. Why? Could it be that the world of the Bible wasn't that different from our world today? People lived with all kinds of fears, economic fears, political fears, health fears. And whenever God breaks into the scene, God says to ordinary, everyday people, you don't have to live your life in fear. Fear's an option. Be not afraid. So it begs the question, what does courage look like in the ordinary average life? When I finished college, I went to my annual conference meeting that summer in the mountains in western North Carolina and met up with a couple of my college friends who were also going into seminary. One of them was married, his wife was with him, another was engaged, and his fiance was with him. And one afternoon, we decided to skip out on the annual conference session and go to a local waterfall I knew something about, Looking Glass Falls. This is a picture of it. And at the bottom of the waterfall is a very large, beautiful swimming hole. It's quite deep and cold. You can climb up on the right side of the rocks next to the waterfall and jump into the swimming hole. And I knew that little trick, and they had never done that, so I introduced them to the idea, and they were feeling quite bold and courageous. But after a while, I wanted something a little more adventurous. So I said to the guys, "What if we climb up like on the left side? I've never done that before." And go under the waterfall and like jump through the waterfall into the swimming hole. Wouldn't that be cool? So we climbed up there, and you can't really tell by the picture, but there was enough room on a ledge for the three of us just right up against the rock wall to stand there with the water cascading over us and contemplate jumping through. Well, after a while, married guy said, "You know, I'm gonna head back down. Don't think this would please the wife too much." Few minutes later, engaged guy said, "Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. My fiance's giving me a look. I recognize that look. I'm climbing down." It left me alone on the ledge, and I looked up, and you can't tell it, but like from where this picture is taken, looking down at the waterfall, is a little viewing area, and quite a crowd had assembled up there. And I'm thinking, what am I going to look like if I climb down? I'm going to look like a chicken. So I screwed up my nerve, and I dove headfirst through the waterfall, and that's when I made two important discoveries. Number one, when water's falling from a high perch above, it carries quite a bit of force with it. I'd never considered that before in my life. And instead of diving through the waterfall, it slammed me straight down. And that's when I made my second discovery. There is a very large boulder under the surface of the water. And probably within an inch of hitting it head on, I just missed the boulder and caught the boulder at a glancing blow down the right side of my body. I escaped with nothing worse than a broken rib and losing most of the skin on the right side of my body. I tell you that story to ask you this question. When you hear that, would you say that's an example of incredible courage or incredible stupidity? Which would you say? Well, gosh, that seemed kind of unanimous there. Yeah, incredible stupidity. Why? Because I confused courage with recklessness. I thought courage was doing something that was out of the ordinary, that you're not really capable of doing normally. And courage is about, you know, doing it anyway. And I've realized courage is not about being a daredevil. That's not the example of courage in the Bible. In the Bible, what we see is courage exhibited in people who don't even see themselves as courageous. Moses gave every excuse he could come up with to God about why he could not go back and say to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." The Midianites attacking Israel, God comes to Gideon and he's huddled in a hole in the ground when God says, "Rise up and fight, you mighty warrior." He's huddled in a hole, but he goes on to do that. Even David, the mighty warrior, when he's first introduced in the Bible, is presented as a young, very frail, small shepherd boy. The Bible goes to great lengths to show that courage is often exhibited in the lives of people who say, "I'm just an ordinary, average person. I can't do anything great." And when courage is exhibited in the Bible, it's always for a reason. It's not, God does not call people to be daredevils. You remember when Satan tempted Jesus to jump down from the top of the temple and prove that God would rescue him and keep him from falling? Jesus says, "You shall not tempt the Lord your God." No, courage in the Bible is shown when God comes to ordinary, everyday people and asks them to carry out God's purposes, even when it requires courage to do it. That is exhibited in the choice of the young girl who would be the mother of Jesus. The angel Gabriel meets her one day and says, "Hail, O favored one, do not be afraid." Now, before we talk about Mary, let me go back to last week for a moment. The first person in the Christmas story to hear the words, "Do not be afraid," from Gabriel was Zechariah the priest. David preached about that last week, and was that not a marvelous message? If you did not get a chance to hear it, go to the archives on the website. Make sure you listen to that sermon last week. Zechariah and his wife were old and barren. They could not have a child. And you get the sense, when you read about Zechariah going through his priestly duties, that he really had lost the expectation that God would come and do something unexpected in the world. I love that line David used last week. He was faithful, but not much faith. Great line. But of course, God interrupts his world and says, "You and your wife Elizabeth are going to have a baby." Now, when we read that story, if you're familiar with the Bible, you sort of recognize it. You say, "Now that's the kind of thing God has done before." Abraham and Sarah, too old to have a child. God came and said, "You're going to have a baby." Isaac prayed to God for his wife who could not have a child, and God said, "You're going to have a child." The same thing happened with the parents of Samuel. So we get to Zechariah and Elizabeth. We say, we recognize the pattern. God breaks into the world for people who say, "This is impossible for us," and makes things possible. And everyone's excited. But then you come to Mary, and it's totally different. God performs a miracle. Mary is a young virgin. She's not married. She's just engaged. And it's going to take as great a miracle for her as it would for Elizabeth to have a baby. But the difference is, for Mary to be expecting a child is not unbelievable. It's very believable. She's a young girl. We believe that Mary was probably about 13 years old, about the same age as Emily, who led us in our act of praise at the start of the service. Now today, for a 13-year-old girl to be expecting a child might be shocking to some, but in the world of the Bible, that wasn't shocking. Girls married very young. It would not be shocking to see a young girl expecting a child. The shock would have been that she was a young, unmarried girl. Today, that might be different. An unmarried woman expecting a child, that wouldn't be shocking. But in the village of Nazareth, Nazareth was so small, it's not even mentioned in the Old Testament. A religious village with important religious customs. For Mary, not yet married, to be expecting a child would have been absolutely scandalous. Adam Hamilton, in his book called The Journey, quotes a story written for the Christian Century. The author tells about the Christmas pageant in his church every year, and the children come to get their parts. All of the boys want to be shepherds. They don't want to be Joseph because Joseph has to hold Mary's hand. So they want to be shepherds. But whenever the leader of the production, the director says, "Now, who wants to be Mary?" Every girl's hand shoots in the air. Me, pick me. It's the most desired role. And then the author asks the question, "Do you think Mary would have wanted to be Mary? Do you think Mary would have wanted to be Mary?" Because she was given a very tough assignment that day. By accepting that role to be the mother of Jesus, she was putting her whole life in a very precarious position. Her life was permanently altered that day. She would face a husband not understanding, wanting to divorce her before they even got married. How stressful do you think that pregnancy was? She would face her family and her entire village rejecting her. She was a young woman without education and without resources. Where would she turn? Even when she had her firstborn son, she was homeless. He had to be born in a stable. And after Jesus was born, she couldn't go back home again. They had to go to Egypt for 2 years. She did not even have the support of parents or in-laws or siblings to raise this young baby. When Jesus grew up and claimed to be the Son of God, it brought ridicule from other friends and family. One day he was crucified and she had to hold the lifeless body of her own son. Do you think Mary wanted to be Mary? When she accepted the angel's invitation that day, she exhibited more courage than she probably knew she had. And faith is like that. We want faith to make life easier. We want our relationship with God to comfort us when we're hurting and to take some of the stress and the distress of life away from us. And for sure, that is part of the truth of faith, but it's not the whole truth. The whole truth of faith is that placing ourselves in the hands of God doesn't always lead us away from challenges. It leads us right into the face of them. It puts us in places where we're asked to take on hard assignments, or when hard assignments are laid on us, we choose to face them with courage and with hope and faith, believing we're not alone. Sometimes it involves more courage than what we realize we have within us when the challenges of life want to make us fold and quit and give up. Maybe you're facing a tough assignment yourself today. Maybe you're caring for a loved one who's very ill. And at times you say, "You know, I didn't ask for this." Maybe you've lost your job. And there are days you don't even want to get out of bed and send out another resume or go to another interview because you just start to believe it's not going to matter anymore. Why try? Maybe you accepted an opportunity. Maybe you volunteered to get involved in an important organization or ministry service, but that service has brought some hardship and you say, hey, I didn't sign up for this. This isn't what I bargained for. I didn't want this assignment. Don't you think there were days, Mary said, I didn't want this assignment, but she said yes to it. She committed her life to showing more courage than she realized she had, because she had the help of one who was going to be with her through thick and thin. And think about the difference that made. Think about all of the people Jesus healed in his life. Think about the people Jesus brought back from the dead. Think about the people who were restored in their relationship with God and understood forgiveness for the first time because of her son Jesus. And why did they ever get to know that? Because of the obedience of a young girl named Mary, who said, I'm going to choose to embody hope. That's what she did. Her assignment was whatever hardship she faces, she and her body is going to embody hope to the world. Maybe the same challenge is there for us when we face our fears. After all, the root of fear, the root behind every fear we have, is this idea that somehow I'm not going to have the resources necessary to meet this challenge, that I'm on my own, that I'm not going to be able to get through this or face it. But wait a minute, I put my hands in the hand of one who's bigger and higher. That's where my life belongs. I'm not alone. I'm going to choose in whatever I'm facing to embody hope. You might be familiar with the hymn, It Is Well With My Soul. You may even be familiar with the story behind that hymn. It was written by a man named Horatio Spafford in the 1800s. He was a Chicago businessman. He and his wife had five children, four daughters and a son. And when his son was 4 years old, he died from scarlet fever. Not long after that, the Chicago fire happened, and Horatio Spafford lost most of his investments in that fire. It nearly took away all of their resources. Their family knew that they would have to rebuild and start over, and they took what they had left to say, you know what, let's focus on us. Let's take a trip, let's get away for a little while, and then we'll come back and do what we've got to do to keep going. So they decided to take a trip to Europe. And at the last minute, he had a business emergency, and he sent his wife and four daughters ahead of him. But midway in the voyage, their ship, during the middle of the night, was struck by another ship, and it sank. All four of his daughters drowned. He got a cable from his wife that said, saved alone. He got on the first ship to go over and meet her. And when the ship got to the place where the other went down, the captain pointed this out to him, and he looked into the deep waters that now held somewhere down below the bodies of his children. And he wrote the words, "It is well with my soul." Now let me ask you a question. Do you really think it was well with his soul when he wrote that? Do you think he was okay? Or do you think, in the middle of facing one of the hardest things he had ever faced, when he just wanted to give up, that he said, wait a minute, no. I'm going to choose to believe what I've always believed, and I'm going to believe it all over again, that God is going to help me somehow. I'm going to be able to get through this. It is well with my soul. Well, like I said, maybe you've heard that before. Maybe you know that story. But like Paul Harvey used to say, here's the rest of the story. When he got to his wife, after days together and much prayer, they made a commitment. We're going to keep going. We're going to exercise courage, and we're going to keep on living. We're not just going to hide away in our grief and give up on life. So they did. They had two more children, a daughter named Bertha and a son, Horatio. But when that son was 4 years old, he also died of the same disease as their first son. This time, the grief was just about more than they could stand. And so they went to Jerusalem with some friends. He wrote to a person and said, "Jerusalem is where my Lord lived, suffered, and conquered. And I too want to learn how to live, suffer, and especially conquer." When they got to Jerusalem in the old city, they went in together to get a house to live in. That house is still there to this day. It became known as the American Colony because they started helping needy people they found around Jerusalem, especially children who had been abandoned, Palestinian children, Jewish children. They just provided a place of healing and hope. Several years later, when their daughter was a grown woman on the way to Christmas Eve services, she was met by a young man and his wife. They had been on a donkey traveling from their home. He brought her to Jerusalem to take her to a hospital because she was very sick. They had a little baby. There was no room in the hospital. So she took them into their home in the American Colony. And the next day, the mother died. The husband said, "We live in a cave. My baby, my son, will die if I take him with us. Will you keep him here?" And so she did, and that began what is known to this day as the Spafford Children's Center in Jerusalem. For over 100 years now, they have provided healing and hope to children, especially those caught in the midst of conflict and struggle in that part of the world. They run a hospital. They run camps in the summertime. It continues to this day. Why? Because people in the midst of a very hard and unwanted assignment in life chose to embody hope. Maybe you're dealing with a tough assignment today. Maybe you didn't want to find yourself alone one day, or jobless, or whatever the difficulty might be. Maybe you didn't want to find yourself in the place right now that's keeping you awake at night and adding stress to your life, but you might be asking the wrong question. You might be asking God, "When are you going to take this away?" And the better question is, "God, how would you want me to face it? How can I embody hope in what I'm going through right now? How can I be an instrument of healing to somebody else around me? How can I choose with great courage every day to focus on the fact that I'm not alone, you're with me, and I'm gonna choose to believe that. And sometimes it takes all the courage I've got just to get out of bed and keep going, but by golly, I'm gonna choose today because you're with me. I'm not alone." As we close, I wanted us to hear the beautiful song, "Mary, Did You Know?" And to see images on the screen as you listen to this song. And as you see these pictures, hear these words, just think about what kind of courage did it take for Mary to be Mary?
Mary, did you know that your baby boy would one day walk on water? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you? This child that you deliver will soon deliver you. Mary, did you know that your baby boy will give sight to the blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm the storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy has walked where angels kiss your little baby. You kiss the face of God. Oh, Mary, did you know? The blind will see, the deaf will hear, the dead will live again. The lame will leap, the dumb will speak, the praises of the Lamb. Mary, did you know that your baby boy is Lord of all creation? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will one day rule the nations? Did you know that your baby boy was heaven's perfect lamb? The sleeping child you're holding is the great.
Just think the tough assignment that Mary followed. And think about how God did something through her difficulties she could not have fully understood at the time. And maybe that's what you need to hold on to. Maybe you're facing something very hard and very difficult. But today you're going to say, God, I'm going to choose to believe that you can do even greater things than I will see or understand. I'm going to choose now to put my trust in you. And to know you're not going to leave me alone in whatever I'm going through, I'm going to do that. Maybe today is a day to do it all over again and to say, Christ Jesus, I welcome you into my heart. Or to do it for the first time and to mark the date down, December the 8th, I just made that decision. I just, like Mary, not even knowing what it would fully mean, I just choose now to say, God, I'm yours. You can have me. Take me and use me. We're going to sing two verses of a closing hymn that just sends us out with this fresh reminder of Mary's challenge and God's promise. Let's sing it to a very familiar Christmas carol. Let's stand as we join together.